This week, what is it about a vision of a lake that brings hope for the future? Greg Knott gives us the clues. Then, what did Queen Anne have to do with Freemasonry going speculative? Well, you'll want to stay dialed in when Steve Harrison gives you the scoop in an all-new Masonic Minute. Then, we wrap it up this week with an in-depth look at the legend of the Noachites. Coming up, right now.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
All right, welcome back. This is episode number 450. 450. That just really feels weird saying that. But anyway, this week, as you heard, we've got a couple great pieces for you. We've got Illustrious Brother Harrison. We've got two great articles that were recently published on the Midnight Freemasons. And let's go ahead and get started. First of all, the news. What's going on in the news? You may have heard in a previous episode that I was going to have Brother Gerald Fortune on. You should be pleased to know that I have scheduled time with him, and we'll have that interview coming very soon. He has such a unique journey into Freemasonry and his life story and what he's into and what he's studying on behalf of basically Freemasonry. Its origins and its secrets are really astounding. I had a number of you come and shoot me messages after the episode with Ben Williams from the Rocky Mountain Mason, who said, we got to hear more from Ben Williams. And I agree. I also got a brother who shot me an email to say, to clarify some of the information that he had about Mormonism and Freemasonry. And he is a member of the church there. And so we're trying to put it together. So we'll have an episode with that brother and Ben and I, they come on the show to talk in depth about Freemasonry and Mormonism, the differences, the contrasts, everything you can think of. So it'll be a great episode. I've also got Brother Dan Horinko. So you guys, I hope, have read the book called The Craft Driven Lodge. The book is fantastic. I can't recommend it enough. It's, I'll call Dan Horinko the Velvet Hammer. He brings to the table in a palatable way much of what's brought in, I would say, maybe Andrew Hammer's book, but he has a slightly different message, and I think he delivers it with the velvet hammer rather than the standard, you know. I think you all will enjoy that. Dan Horinko will be on. We've already got that scheduled, and I think we'll have Brother Ackram on again in the future at some point as well. I know I'm forgetting somebody. If I remember, I'm just going to butt in, and I'll let you know, but we've got a great number of guests coming up. So as far as speaking presentations, a couple updates there. On the 23rd, I believe I'm presenting for the North Carolina Lodge of Research. You can bet your bottom dollar that'll be live on Facebook Live, and you can tune in there via the Refracted Light Facebook group. So I would recommend hopping in there if you wanted to catch that. It's totally free. You just get into the group, answer a few questions. Make sure you do that beforehand because it might take them a few minutes to validate something you've got going on. July 25th is when I will be premiering a presentation for Esotericon 2020. As we all know, Esotericon has made a digital pivot. They're going digital, but with all the benefits of in-person. So I think you guys will all benefit, still going, still checking it out. I think they did some refunds of tickets, so the ticket cost is a little cheaper also. Definitely something you should look into. Camp Masonry. Everybody's been asking, it's been making the rounds. Yes, Camp Masonry got canceled. It's a huge bummer. I was bummed. It's one of my favorite things to do every year. So it is with displeasure that I have to announce that, but better safe than sorry, and we don't want to get anybody sick, and we don't want to take any chances. So here's hoping for Camp Masonry next year. MasonicCon 822, so August 22nd. Ezekiel Bates, MasonicCon, still happening. It was rescheduled, and I think Brother Brian Simmons is really excited about it, as well as the entire lodge. This will be the last year that it's going to be there in Massachusetts. They're going to be moving it
to surrounding states to make it bigger and get it around. So it's going to be really cool. And then you guys all know in September, MasonicCon Chicago, we're still on, we're still in person. We've had no indications as of yet of needing to make a digital pivot. We planned for late enough in the year. We're hoping this will be just fine and perfect for everybody still. Before we dive too far in, I want to ask everybody out there, if you're listening, you're on a computer right now, go to YouTube, go to WCY Podcast's YouTube channel, and smash the subscribe button. It helps us out immensely in the way they do their analytics, and if we're trying to get the light of Freemasonry out there, reputable information out there, this is how we can do it. We get enhanced on the search results, all of these things. So please do that for us. And we wouldn't be here at all without our producers, our fellows, and our contributors. So a major thanks goes out to all of you who have signed up to assist us month to month, year after year, to bring this program to you, all episodes, all the time. That pays for our website, it pays for the hosting. Every bit of this is just paid for with those donations. So I really want to thank all of you. If you're interested in helping out the WCY podcast, go to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. There are some other links there that you can check out, and anything that you purchase through this website or you click through likely has some sort of affiliate where they kick back a few pennies to our show, and all that helps. So if you can't donate, maybe consider checking out our bookstore or something like that. That is through Amazon, and we have an Amazon affiliate. And WCY is an Amazon affiliate, so we can get a few pennies on the dollar when you check out the bookstore. And if you want something that we've had on the show, it's going to be in there, including Steve Harrison's stuff. So please do check that out. We're not doing any adverts through the pandemic, so let's get into the education. Just know that if you want to help us out, go to the website. Now, the first piece for this week is called Hope. Some of you might know that I recently published an article on not my own channel, and that is because it was of a sensitive nature, and if you're interested in that, go check it out. You can find it. But here was something I thought that was just so important in the recent weeks, and I think Greg Knott really hit it on the head with just these couple paragraphs. Hope. By Senior Midnight Freemason Contributor, Worshipful Brother Gregory J. Knott. Tomorrow will be beautiful, for tomorrow comes out of the lake. By Emmanuel Carnevale, December of 1921. The world seems to be in complete turmoil due to the COVID-19 pandemic, businesses and the economy suffering, and the recent protests across the globe in response to the death of George Floyd. Then, there it was, all of a sudden, as I looked out the window, hope. The beautiful sunset that you see in the picture above on June 8, 2020 from the prairie of Illinois was nothing short of spectacular. It was as if God himself was speaking to all of us, saying that no matter what storm you may be traveling through, on the other side, there is hope waiting for you. As Freemasons, we frequently hear the word hope in our lectures. Faith, hope, charity. But do we truly consider what it means beyond the shallow everyday usage? We say as brethren, I hope enough brothers show up to open the lodge. Or, I hope we don't spend too much time on the minutes. Or, I hope we get a petition soon. The hope I am thinking about is boundless in meaning. It is the hope of the potential of a world where all mankind can truly meet on the level, where the opportunity for equality is not a goal, but an expectation. Hope requires work on your part and mine. It takes persistence, that even when we might be tired or exhausted, we need to keep moving onward. It means looking inward into oneself and giving yourself an honest evaluation of who you are, or more importantly, who you could become. Hope is the great gift to all mankind. I saw hope in the beautiful sunset for a beautiful tomorrow. worshipful brother, Gregory J. Knott. You know, if I'm being honest there, Greg hit on 2 points that I just think are just worth putting a microscope over. And that is that we have limitless potential, that opportunity for equality is not a goal, but an expectation. We should expect no less. And I think Greg pointed that out wonderfully. And lastly, Greg says, it means looking inward into oneself and giving yourself an honest evaluation of who we are. And of course, that comes with who we could become. So thinking about who we are, we look in the mirror. Of course, thoughts kind of do this effervescent thing where when we really are thinking about who we are and what we stand for, the things we've done, the bad things and the good things. But man, we sure are ashamed about those bad things. They do bubble up and we don't even want to think about them. We just push them down. But they're there. But are we better than those things now? Do we still do those things? Or are they just shadows of some past thing? Who can we be when we're thinking about those things we've done, remembering them so that we don't forget who that was? Or if it means thinking about, do I have biases? What do they look like? What weird, uncomfortable thoughts have I had that I'm ashamed to even admit? But admitting them to yourself puts you in a place to recognize them and not do them again. And that's that future state. So this is a powerful message from Greg. And I'm recording this episode a couple weeks in advance. And all I can hope is that by the time this comes out, well, I know we're not going to be perfect yet. It's going to take a lot longer than 2 weeks. But this will always be relevant. No matter what time, no matter what turmoil the world is going through, whether it was the mid-1990s where everything was blasé before the terrorist attacks, or whether it was 6 months ago, or 12 months ago, or 30 years ago, this is just relevance, and it always will be because it involves self-reflection on the part of the man, the woman, the mason. It's just personal and internal work. So I just want to say out loud right now to Greg, this was amazing. Thank you for putting this one up, Greg. Now, if you don't know, Greg is one of the co-hosts of the new Masonic podcast called the Meet Acton Part Podcast. It's a show, it's a Masonic podcast hosted by some Midnight Freemason regular contributors, Greg Knott, Darren Laners, and Bill Hosler, and occasional help from their founder, Todd E. Creason, and others. And they cover a lot of Masonic and non-Masonic topics alike. Of course, you know, they've had intense guests on the show. The first episode, you know, they talked about Masonic education, the Entered Apprentice degree. But listen to these guests. Most Worshipful Brother Roger E. Van Gordon. Most Worshipful Mike D. Nichols. They've had Steve Harrison on, Todd Creason, Eric Marks, Chris Hodapp, and Alice Von Cannon. They've had Most Worshipful Stephen Oakley, the Grand Master, current sitting Grand Master of Illinois. They had Michael Pohl on. They had Maynard Edwards on. They've just covered so much ground already. So if you want to learn more, we'll put the link back in the show notes, but check out meetactandpart.com. They've got tons of great content there that'll keep you busy at least for the foreseeable future. And now let's go ahead and get into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother, Stephen L. Harrison.
Anne Boleyn was queen consort of England from 1533 to 1536, and the second of Henry VIII's 6 wives. Her time in the king's court was tumultuous and, as most know, did not end well. Unless you were King Henry, who probably thought the ending was just peachy. The events of her reign and demise are filled with swirling speculation, and likely no one will ever know the full story. But there is one thing about it that may be easier to conclude. She may have had a significant and lasting effect on our gentle craft. Anne was born in about 1504 to well-to-do parents in Kent, a seacoast county southeast of London. When she was about 18, she parlayed her family status into securing a position as a lady-in-waiting to Catherine of Aragon, Henry's first wife. King Henry, a man with a roving eye and a stable of mistresses to prove it, chased after her, but the crafty gal put a stop to his advances, telling him,
"I will be nothing less than queen."
This caused a problem for Henry because he already had a queen, and you're only allowed one, especially under the strict rules of the Catholic Church with its pesky rule against divorce. Henry became increasingly infatuated with the forbidden fruit that was young Anne, and was upset by the fact that in 24 years of marriage, Catherine had not given him a male heir. How to solve what many were calling the king's problem? Well, he decided his marriage to Catherine, who happened to be his brother's former wife, was blighted by God, and he petitioned Pope Clement for an annulment. Long story short, the Pope said no. So Henry formed the Church of England and, not surprisingly, appointed himself to be its supreme head. The Pope excommunicated Henry, but no problem, he had his own church. This paved the way for dumping Catherine, and in 1533, the 42-year-old king finally married Anne, who by now was in her mid to late 20s. Anne quickly had a child. Unfortunately for her, a girl, Elizabeth, who eventually became queen. Anne, like Catherine, was male child challenged, which dampened King Henry's infatuation with her. On top of that, a guy named Henry Norris became smitten with the queen, who was overheard telling him,
"Look to dead men's shoes, for if something bad should happen to the king, then you could have me."
Speaking of the king's death was considered treason. Henry accused Anne of being a traitor and used other innuendo and rumors to pile on charges of incest and adultery. After 3 years of marriage, he had Anne executed and moved on to Jane Seymour in his unsuccessful quest for a male heir. So what does all this have to do with the Freemasons? Well, when Henry formed the Church of England, the Catholic Church obviously stopped expanding there. Henry stopped building or expanding cathedrals, convents, and monasteries. The market for stonemasons dried up. Under those circumstances, what's a skilled stonemason to do? You're either out of work, or you travel in foreign countries, receive master's wages, and be thereby the better enabled to support yourself and family, and contribute to the relief of distressed, worthy brother master masons, their widows, and orphans. This put operative lodges in an uncomfortable position. Some think this situation may have contributed to the lodges, for survival, to begin opening their doors to speculative Freemasonry. It is possible, then, had Anne Boleyn never come along, and the Reformation never happened, or been delayed, the movement to speculative Freemasonry would also have been delayed. Now, this is just food for thought. Don't overthink it. And for God's sake, don't lose your head over it, like Anne did.
Ouch!
For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, as always, fantastic content from Brother Harrison. If you are interested, please head on over to WCYpodcast.com. Check out the bookstore. All of the books that are listed here are, of course, through Amazon, and when you click on them, they are affiliate links, right? So we get a couple pennies if you purchase through these links, which helps this show out. But we've got a couple sections, books by those who've been on the show, and Steve Harrison's books are here. His books, of course, would be the Freemasonry Crosses the Mississippi, Tales from the Craft, and Freemasons at Oak Island. But then two other books, which are the Masonic Memoranda of Frederick L. Billen, which is fantastic, has a lot of great contextual information about Freemasonry in that day and age, and then the all-new Ravi Denslow's Masonic Journey, Volume 1 and 2 Kindle Edition, which is insanely cool and really wonderful. If you want in print for that last book, I want you to check out the Missouri Lodge of Research's website, where you can download a petition and become a member, and you will get those books at a significant discount. I will have the link to Missouri Lodge of Research in the show notes as well, but that's where you can get Illustrious Brother Harrison's books. We've also got the My Personal Recommended Reading list, and below that, recommended reading from our guests. So if you've heard a book that was recommended by our guest, that'll be there also. But please check that out and get your read on. All right, next is a new piece from Worshipful Brother Darren A. Laners, another co-host of Meet, Act, and Part. He is the current editor of the Midnight Freemasons. I've taken a little break because I'm back in school, so I want to give Brother Darren a huge thanks and a shout-out for taking this on as I take a little leave of absence. So Darren wrote a piece that got a lot of traction, particularly among the Facebook groups of appendant bodies. And, well, let's just dive in. The Noachites. Now, there are different ways to pronounce this. Noachides, Noachites, Noachides, Noachides. I'm going to say Noachides. If that makes you cringe, sorry about that. But here we go. The Noachites by Midnight Freemason contributor Worshipful Brother Darren A. Laners. It may be a surprise to some Freemasons that Hiram Abiff wasn't always in a prominent role in the Master Mason degree. In fact, the first reference to the Hiramic legend occurs in 1730 in Samuel Pritchard's Masonry Dissected. In this work, Pritchard refers to Hiram as Grand Master Hiram. We do know that by 1738, the Hiramic legend seems to be in place, as Dr. James Anderson's Constitutions of 1738 states that after the completion of the temple, their joy was soon interrupted by the death of their dear master Hiram Abiff, whom they decently interred in the lodge near the temple, according to ancient usage. If Hiram wasn't always featured in the Master Mason degree until sometime around 1730, then what was the degree like? In 1936, a document entitled The Whole Institutions of Freemasonry opened and proved by the best of tradition and still some reference to scripture was discovered. The document, which came to be known as the Grand Manuscript, comprises two small pieces of parchment which have been dated to 1726. It was written in very old English and thought to be a copy from another document. Translated into modern English, it reads, quote, "We have it by tradition, and still some reference to scripture, for it caused Shem, Ham, and Japheth to go to their father Noah's grave, for to see if they could find anything about him to lead them to the valuable secret which this famous preacher had. For I hope all will allow that all things needful for the new world was in the ark with Noah. Now these three men had already agreed that if they did not find the very thing itself, that the first thing that they found was to be to them as a secret. They not doubting, but did most firmly believe that God was able, and would also prove willing, through their faith, prayer, and obedience, to cause what they did find to prove as valuable to them as if they had received the secret at first from God himself at its headspring. So they came to the grave, finding nothing save the dead body, almost consumed away. Taking a grip at a finger, it came away. So from joint to joint, so to the wrist, so to the elbow. So they reared up the dead body and supported it, setting foot to foot, knee to knee, breast to breast, cheek to cheek, and hand to back, and cried out, Help, O Father! As if they had said, O Father of heaven, help us now, our earthly father cannot. So lay down the dead body again, and not knowing what to do, so one said, Here is yet marrow in this bone. And the second said, But a dry bone. And the third said, It stinketh. So they agreed to give it a name, as is known to Freemasonry to this day. So went to their undertakings, and afterwards works stood. End quote. So it can be said that, without a doubt, that Noah held an important role in the Master Mason degree prior to the introduction of Hiram Abiff. This is further illustrated in Albert Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry and its Kindred Sciences. Under the entry for Noah, Mackey states, quote, In all the old Masonic manuscript constitutions that are extant, Noah and the Flood play an important part in the legend of the craft. Hence, as the Masonic system became developed, the Patriarch was looked upon as what was called a patron of Freemasonry. This connection of Noah with the mystic history of the Order was rendered still closer with the influence of many symbols borrowed from Archite worship, one of the most prominent of the ancient faiths. So intimately were incorporated the legends of Noah with the legends of Freemasonry that Freemasons began at length to be called, and are still called, Noachida, or the descendants of Noah, a term first applied by Dr. Anderson and very frequently used at a much later day. End quote. With all of the characters in the Old and New Testaments, then why would Noah be chosen to be represented in the Master Mason degree prior to Hiram Abiff? Noah was important for a few reasons. One, he and his ancestors would have been the progenitors of the human race after the flood, as well as the saviors of the animals of the land that he held in the ark. Two, he carried the Noahide laws, or the six laws given to Adam by God, to which a seventh was given to Noah. These were the laws which would be followed by his people until he gave Moses the Ten Commandments. The Noahide laws were 1. Renounce all idols. 2. Worship the one true God. 3. Commit no murder. 4. Be not defiled by incest. 5. Do not steal. 6. Be just. 7. Eat no flesh with blood in it. 3. He would have been the keeper of antediluvian knowledge, especially the seven liberal arts and sciences. Mackey acknowledges these points further down in his entry for Noah. Quote, The writer of the Cook manuscript, 1410-1450 CE, had before him an original which may have been written about 1350 CE. The author of that original frankly acknowledges that many of his historical statements are taken from the quote-unquote Polychronicon, a sort of universal history or omnium gatherum in which were collected scraps and fragments of lore of many kinds, especially about the remote past, and without any attempt to distinguish genuine history from myths, legends, tales, and fables. It was from such a polysilronicon that the writer of the Cook original drew the story of Noah and the deluge, which the Cook condenses into a paragraph beginning at line 290. According to the old tale thus taken from the Polychronicon, men knew that God would destroy the world out of vengeance, either by fire or by water. Therefore, in order to save them from destruction, men wrote the secrets of the arts and sciences on two pillars of stone. When the vengeance came, it turned out to be by water, as Noah had expected, and for 365 days he and his family lived in the ark. With him were his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and their wives. Many years afterwards, the Chronolyra telleth, the two pillars were found. Pythagoras found one, and Hermes the other. The old charges, Masonic manuscripts, old constitutions, etc., they also were called, which served as a charter for the first permanent lodges of the Freemasons, were held in great reverence. In them was this story of Noah and the pillars, and it is from this source, it is reasonable to believe, that pillar and column symbolism came to be used in speculative masonry, and since the use of the arts and sciences traced directly back to Noah's sons, who recovered their use after the deluge, practitioners of them were sometimes called Sons of Noah. The first, or 1723 edition of the Book of Constitutions of the Mother Grand Lodge, touches but lightly on the story of Noah, but in the second, or 1738 edition, the whole account is changed. The ark itself is described as being a Masonic masterpiece, and Noah and his three sons are described as four grand officers, And it came to pass that they journeyed from the east of the plains of Mount Ararat, where the ark rested toward the west. They found a plain in the land of Shinar, and dwelt there as Noachide, or sons of Noah. In a footnote, the author explains the word, the first name of Masons, according to some old traditions. End quote. What those old traditions were, nobody knows, but because there is no evidence that operative Freemasons called themselves by that name. But it was in some use prior to 1738, for in 1734, Lord Weynorth ordered a letter to be sent to the provincial Grand Master at Calcutta, in which this curious statement was included. Quote, Providence has fixed your lodge near those learned Indians that affect to be called Noachide. The strict observance of his precepts taught in those parts by the disciples of the great Zoroasters, the learned Archimagus of Bactria, a grand master of the Magians, whose religion is much preserved in India, which we have no concern about, and also many of the rituals of the ancient fraternity used in this time, perhaps more than they are sensible themselves. So, if it was consistent with your other business to discover in those parts the remains of old masonry and transmit them to us, we would be all thankful. End quote. AQC 11, page 35. If ever Noachide was in use as a name for Masons, it could not have been extensive, because the word, an ugly hybrid, is almost never met with in early lodge minutes or histories. It is probable that all such small use of it as is encountered in American lodges in the first half of the 19th century, it is now wholly obsolete, was directly owing to the popularity here of the writings of the Reverend George Oliver, who never hesitated to give to fancies out of his own mind the same weight as the verdict records of history. There were two reasons for the place of Noah and his sons in Masonic thought and traditions. It is obvious that the writer of the Cook manuscript, or rather the author of the original, of which the Cook is a copy, had an historical problem to solve. If the deluge destroyed everything, how were the arts and sciences, geometry especially, preserved and recorded? The story of the pillars, and of the use made of them by Noah's sons, which, as was seen, he found ready-made in a polychronicon, was his solution. Second, the story of the sons of Noah had a point to it of value for Masons who sought to make clear to their own minds the religious foundations of the craft. If Masonry was geometry and architecture is as old as the world, if it existed in Noah's time, it existed before Christianity or Judaism, and yet it now works in Christian lands. How could a Christian society have a pre-Christian origin? The answer was that under the separate religions is a ground, or fundamental, or matrix of a universal religion which consists of a belief in God and brotherhood among men, and righteousness. Oliver himself gives one of the clearest expressions of this idea in a paragraph of his In a Dictionary of Symbolical Masonry, New York, 1855, page 190. Noachida, sons of Noah, the first names of Freemasons, whence we may observe that believing the world as framed by one supreme God and is governed by him, and loving and worshipping him, and honoring our parents and loving our neighbor as ourselves, and being merciful even to brute beasts, is the oldest of all religions. End quote. Not all versions of the old charges contain the Noah story in the same form. The Grand Manuscript version, which has so many details peculiar to itself, and is really an old catechism more than a version of the old charges, gives the Noah story in a different form and reads in it a different lesson, and it has the lost secrets discovered after the death of Noah rather than after the death of Hiram. In his Ahiman Rezon, a book of constitutions, writing as a grand secretary for the ancient Grand Lodge of 1751, Lawrence Dermot ridicules the whole story, but it is only as history that he ridicules it, not as symbolism, because to judge by such, written remains of it have survived. The ancient ritual connected the great pillars with the two pillars in the Cook manuscript. Also, in both ancient and modern symbolism, in the Royal Arch, the Ark is used as an emblem. This identification of the Ark with Noah's Ark may be a mistake on the part of the 18th century ritualists, because before 1717, operative guilds kept their papers in a coffin, quote-unquote, which later reappears under the name Casket, the Lodge, and the Ark. Prior to being widows' sons, Freemasons were sometimes identified as Noachides or Noachites, or Sons of Noah. This is further confirmed again by Mackey under the entry of Noachida or Noachites in the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry and its Kindred Sciences. Another quote, which reads, "The descendants of Noah, a term applied to Freemasons on the theory derived from the legend of the craft that Noah was the father and founder of the Masonic system of theology. Hence, the Freemasons claim to be his descendants because in times past they preserved the pure principles of his religion amid the corruptions of surrounding faiths." Dr. Anderson first used the word in this sense in the second edition of the book Constitutions. A Mason is obliged by his tenure to observe the moral law as a true Noachide. Aside from being the sons of Noah, the Noachides were essentially those that followed the Noachide laws up until the time of Moses. In following the moral laws of a Freemason, Freemasons were also following the Noachide laws and therefore were associated with the Noachides. It is easy to see the similarities between the Noachide legend given in the Graham manuscript and the current Hiramic legend. Both include raising from the grave, 5 points of fellowship, and a pact to record whatever was observed during the actions in an attempt to recover lost knowledge. Furthermore, the words and actions around the grave should strike some level of familiarity with Master Masons. I think one can say that the Noachide legend was mostly transformed into the Hiramic legend that we know today. Noah and his sons still are present in Freemasonry in one of the allied Masonic degrees, in that of the Royal Ark Mariner. Noah is also alluded to one of the emblems of a Master Mason, the Anchor and the Ark. I think that the brethren who went through the Master Mason degree prior to when Hiram Abiff was part of it had a profound and deep-moving experience. I can only imagine how interesting the degree would have been to actually witness, with Noah being the main figure. All this being said, I might be the only Freemason that is disappointed that real grip of a Master Mason isn't called It Stinketh. It would be a much easier explanation than COVID-19 to explain why we're now bumping elbows instead of shaking hands. Darren A. Laners. Well, there you have this history of kind of the Noachide legend, as Worshipful Brother Darren has laid it out here for us. If you'd like to contact him about any part of the story, please go to midnightfreemasons.org, and you can find his contact information there. Just under his biography there on the right-hand side, just scroll down a little bit and you'll see it. But for all of you listening, if you're just can't wait to type it in, it's just darren.laners, L-A-H-N-E-R-S, @gmail.com. And he'll get back to you when he can. That's it for this week. I want to thank you all for joining me one more time for some Masonic education. And I hope you all are doing well and staying safe. My thanks again goes out to our contributors, our fellows, and our producers. Thank you guys so much for making this happen for all of us. And make sure you all find us on YouTube and like, subscribe, do those things for us so that we get quality Masonic education and information at the top of the list. Thanks to Steve Harrison for his continued work on doing the Masonic Minute segment for us. And that's it. So we'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.